For Columbia City Council meeting to order. I'm going to ask this evening, we have Boy Scouts from Troops 706 and 523, and I'm asking them to come forward for the presentation of colors and to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. I'll also point out that in addition to leading us in the presentation of colors, they're in attendance to fulfill their requirements for the Citizenship in the Community Merit Badge and the Communications Merit Badge. So I'll invite them to come forward and ask everyone else to please rise
Color guard advance. Color guard cross the colors. Prepare to post the colors. Post the colors. Will everyone please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, troops and troop leaders, for leading us in that. Appreciate it. All right. Now, for our normal Columbia City Council meeting, there are multiple opportunities for public engagement from the public to speak. The public has an opportunity under public hearings, old business, new business, portions of the agenda. We ask that when commenting during these portions, comments are kept to the legislation that we are voting on that evening. At the end of the meeting, we have general comments. And at general comments, you can talk about things that are on the agenda or anything else you want to. You'll be given 3 minutes as an individual to make comment. If you are an organization that's being impacted by the legislation, you can request 5. I do ask that you make eye contact and let me know you're requesting the 5 so I can let Laquelle know to change that. Oh, Sheila, will you please call roll? I got so excited.
Mr. Foster?
Here.
Mr. Waterman?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Ms. Buffalo?
Here.
Mr. Knoth?
Here.
Ms. Prophet?
Here.
Mr. Lovelady?
Here.
Thank you, Sheila. And as a reminder, we'll be respectful of the time limit so that everybody has an opportunity to speak. And as with everything, there's always opportunity for disagreement. I ask that people keep their comments on the issues. We do not applaud, snap, except for we do applaud when someone's getting a special recognition for retirement. I also ask that we do not attack people, including city staff. We can disagree on issues and topics, but remember that we're all neighbors. If someone were to disrupt the meeting from the audience, I'll give a warning to stop, and if it continues, those interrupting might be asked to leave, and we'll take a 5-minute recess. I did also want to make note, we do have some weather forecasts that we are watching. In the case of sirens going off for weather, staff does have a plan and will lead us into a safe space if we need to go in case the sirens do go off for the weather. All right, so moving on to our agenda, we'll do approval of previous minutes. I'll make a motion to approve the March 18th, 2024 regular meeting minutes. Can I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Nick Foster. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Moving on, are there any changes to the agenda? Seeing none, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as posted. Can I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Roy Lovelady. All those in favor of approval of the agenda say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none. All right. So some of us missed a retirement party of last week, and it is of practice in the city to show recognition for department heads who are retiring. So I'll ask for Fire Chief Clayton Farr to please join me at the podium. All right, so this is a resolution of appreciation from the City Council to Clayton Farr Jr., Fire Chief. So whereas Clayton Farr Jr. began employment with the City of Columbia on November 9th, 1992 as a communications operator, serving in that role through September 8th, 1995, And whereas Chief Farr returned to employment with the City of Columbia as a Firefighter 1 on July 6, 1998, and was promoted to Fire Lieutenant on October 15, 2003, Fire Battalion Chief on March 2, 2012, Fire Division Chief on March 3, 2017, Assistant Fire Chief on January 9, 2002, Acting Fire Chief on September 3, 2022, and Fire Chief on October 29, 2022. And whereas Chief Farr has retired from employment with the City of Columbia today, April 1, 2024, where, after over 28 years of public service, has made a significant contribution to the well-being of thousands of residents in this community. And whereas it is the desire of the mayor and council to recognize and thank Chief Farr for his outstanding public service and assistance to this and former city councils. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the City Council extends its heartfelt thanks to Chief Farr for his dedicated public service and his commitment to keeping Columbia a viable city. We wish him joy, happiness, and good health in his retirement. And then it's signed by all of us. So, thank you for this. You can clap now. Chief Farr, as you leave, I will point out we do have a vacancy on the Building Construction Codes Commission for a fire expert, so I'll send you the application for sure. Thank you. All right, so we don't have any appointments to boards and commissions, but we will at the next meeting. Maybe he'll turn his application in by then. We'll see. So we do have on our agenda, we always have scheduled public comment. So members of the public can contact the city manager's office by noon on the Wednesday prior to the city council meeting to schedule a public comment. Scheduled public comment cannot be on items that are on the same night's agenda. The exception is for topics under report section. So of note, it has been typical practice of the city council to ask for additional follow-up at the end of the city council if questions come up during that time. Tonight, we have two scheduled public comments. I'd first like to ask Carolyn Omperon to come forward to speak. You do get 5 minutes, yes. You don't have to request it, it's given. You and Don.
Okay. Hi, Carolyn Omperon. Tonight, I'm speaking on behalf of the 100% by Renewable Energy Coalition, which includes Mid-Missouri Peaceworks, the League of Women Voters, Renew Missouri, Mid-Missouri Sierra Club, climate leaders at Mizzou, and many concerned citizens. 2023 was the planet's warmest year on record, according to the analysis by the scientists from NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information. Antarctic sea ice coverage dropped to a record low in 2023. Climate change is accelerating. According to NOAA's chief scientist, we will continue to see records broken and extreme events grow until emissions go to zero. Government policy can address both emissions, but also actions to reduce climate impacts by building resilience. I'm here this evening to talk about multiple aspects of government policy within your control. You are familiar with our group for advocating for more renewable energy. We are here tonight, though, to support a three-pillar approach to the need to reduce emissions and to increase community resilience. These three pillars are 100% renewable energy for the utility, a significant increase in energy efficiency for the built infrastructure for Columbia, and energy conservation through human choices to reduce energy usage. Tonight, I will focus on energy efficiency. This month, the Water and Light Advisory Board and the Climate and Environment Commission will be reviewing revisions to Columbia Water and Light's energy efficiency demand management programs. We applaud the long-term commitment the city and the utility have had to energy savings. The current and proposed programs incorporate some consideration for low and moderate income households, but it is not enough. Opportunities for participation for these households must be increased to improve the resiliency of our community to extreme temperatures. The utility offerings today require an investment upfront on the part of the homeowner. Some people just don't have $50 to several thousand dollars to invest. There are low-interest loans for those who can qualify. However, many low- and moderate-income households cannot take on a new payment. We request that the city consider implementing a program that utilizes on-bill financing to recover the cost of energy efficiency improvements from the energy savings. The repayment is capped by the energy savings so that the customer is not paying any more than they did before the improvements. Many utilities, both small and large, have successfully implemented these programs. One key advantage of these programs is that the improvements and the financial obligation are tied to the meter rather than the person. Therefore, the cost of the investments can continue to be recovered even if the property is sold or a new renter moves in. Another key benefit is the programs are open to renters with landlord approval. We encourage the City Council and the city staff to explore and implement an on-bill financing program for low and moderate income households. Pay-as-you-save, or PAYS, is one example of this type of program. We realize these type of decisions will require a great deal of time for the city to approve and implement. We request the review and approval process begin now so the city can deploy this program in conjunction with the deployment of advanced metering infrastructure, which is already planned. Additionally, we want to ask for an update on rental energy efficiency minimum standards. In July 5th, 2022, the City Council authorized the staff to move forward to plan and implement a process that establishes a date by which rental housing will meet basic energy efficiency standards and defines those standards. Early in 2023, a survey was conducted. As of now, it's been a year since the survey was completed. We encourage the City Council to seek an update on the project. Over 50% of Columbia's housing stock are rental units. 8,000 of those are with low-income families that have a high energy burden of at least 17%. Additionally, the state of Missouri is participating in a federal program that will deliver significant financial investments for property owners to implement energy home improvements. Columbia needs to have our standards finished and done so that we can move forward at the same time as these home rebates are available from the state of Missouri, which will significantly help move that program forward and provide financial incentives. Both of these initiatives are identified in the Climate Action and Adaptation Plan. The time for us to move forward on the rental energy efficiency standards and on-bill energy efficiency improvements repayment plan is now. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And now I'd like to ask for Donna Claiborne to please come toward the podium.
My name is Donna Claiborne, and she's passing out the information that I submitted to the City Council. I'm an African-American citizen in the City of Columbia. I'm a registered voter and a taxpayer. I'm also a member of the Noble Court Association, so I'd like to get the 5 minutes.
You got it. Okay.
In 2023, I researched Noble Court's history. I met the mayor, and I started attending City Council meetings to express my interest in joining the McKinney Task Force. I was excited about the opportunity. I submitted a report that contains all the information that led me to be here this evening, and I strongly encourage all the City Council members and the mayor to read these documents. Madam Mayor, I am eager to schedule a meeting with you at your earliest convenience. I believe it's never too late to foster change that puts accountability, transparency, and inclusion between the City of Columbia and the Black community first. The Black community has a right to sit at the table and not be told what to do and how to do it. I'm hoping that a meeting with DeAndre Thompson, the City Diversity Officer, will lead to development of strategies that ensure everyone in our community feels welcome and that promote equality and respect. I will summarize some of the critical points of the information I submitted to save time. After my experiences with some of the meetings that I attended with the City Council and the task force in the Juneteenth, I came to the understanding that if you are not one of the few token Black representatives that the City Council has relied on for years to represent the Black community, expressing your opinion and asking questions would result in being provided with false information, intimidation, disrespect, and having your voice brushed aside. Perhaps the most devastating consequences is having your name slandered in the community that you lived in. This happened to me. These actions undermine the trust and unity within the Black community. It started when Julie, I can't say her name right, Amos, she's the assistant director of the City of Columbia, repeatedly asked me to organize the Juneteenth events in Douglas Park. I never anticipated the outcome that came about. After reaching out to Amy regarding the slanderous comments made by, Julie, the director of, assistant director of the Columbia Convention and Visitors Bureau. When Julie persistently encouraged me to organize the Juneteenth events in Douglas Park, I never anticipated the outcome. Upon reaching out to Amy regarding the slanderous comments made by Reverend Gray concerning me organizing the event at Douglas Park, my concerns were dismissed. Amy and Julie could have been transparent in the situation regarding me organizing the event in Douglas Park and informed me about the rumors and accusations regarding Reverend James Gray's organizing and handling of the Juneteenth 2023 events through Como Juneteenth. I repeatedly asked Amy and Julie, who work for the Visitors Center Convention and Visitors Bureau, and reached out to Reverend Gray, but received no response. I made the decision to organize that event, but I believe the City of Columbia bears some responsibility for the causing division and conflict for the Black community. The City of Columbia received $38,280 for Juneteenth 2024. Nine applications were awarded for a total of $23,704. $10,000 went to the City of Columbia. The consulting firm, I attended every meeting for the grant. The consulting firm, Cypress Consulting, did not provide the service listed in the minutes that I gave to you that's dated March 11, 2024. Did the City of Columbia budget any money to celebrate this historic holiday? The mayor proclaimed Noble Court as the first Black subdivision in Columbia. Why can't we receive a marker for this historic event? I feel like, in my opinion, the individuals that I have listed, Amy Schneider, the director of Division and Tourism, Julie, I don't know if I'm saying my name right, Amos, she's the assistant director, and Megan Mokauchi, she is the communications and outreach supervisor. Barbara Harrell, Reverend Clyde Ruffin, and Reverend James Gray. In my opinion, these individuals have abused their positions and power, and I'm asking the City of Columbia to hold these individuals accountable for their actions.
Thank you, right. Donna.
Thank you.
Follow up with this. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Moving on. Next on our agenda, we have public hearings. So, Sheila, will you please read public hearing 924?
Public hearing 924 is the proposed installation of traffic calming devices on Spencer Avenue between Worley Street and I-70 Drive Southwest.
We have a staff report.
Yes. Good evening. My name is Shane Creech, and I'm the Public Works Director. This project would install traffic calming measures along Spencer Avenue between Worley and I-70 Drive Southwest. Spencer scored as the second highest priority project in the 2022 Neighborhood Traffic Management Plan and had an 85th percentile speed of over 39 miles an hour. Spencer has approximately 1,375 vehicles traveling on it per day and has a posted speed limit of 25 miles an hour. Staff held two interested parties meetings for this project, one April 25th of last year and another January 23rd of this year. From those discussions and subsequent design, staff is recommending the installation of three speed humps during the 2024 construction season. Staff estimates the cost of the project at $12,000, paid from our annual traffic calming account. Richard Stone, the department's engineering and operations manager, is with me tonight, and we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
All right. Do we have any questions from council for staff? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and open up the public hearing. Would anyone from the public wish to speak on the proposed installation of traffic calming devices on Spencer Avenue? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. Have any council comments come to us on this? Nick, your ward, you go first.
I just want to add, I had the benefit of attending both of those IP meetings, and there was universal support from those in attendance, and as well as some of the business interests in the area, which was a surprise to some of the residents, that some of the dealership representatives showed up encouraging this because they don't want their staff using it as a test run, and they try to discourage that already. So I just wanted to bring that up, and that both community and business support this in that area, and so I'm happy to see it move forward.
Nick Foster, you had a question?
Really just curious, Shane, that I see Spencer, you know, between Worley and 70 out of road, but does it differ from that extension of Clink Scales there or Hunt that do essentially the same thing? Are there any problems with similar kinds of speed issues along those roads?
Well, Clink Scales is designated as a collector roadway. It does have some parking on it as well. Spencer does too, but essentially Clink Scale functions as that collector in the area, so this is a lower classification roadway, so we would anticipate doing that on this roadway. Hunt was actually reconstructed about 10 years ago or 8 years ago, and that has helped. We kind of narrowed a little bit of the pavement width, and that has helped kind of curb some of that. I think there may still be some concerns there, but we do not currently have it as a project.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Any other council comments? Seeing none, I'll make a motion to authorize staff to proceed with the installation of traffic calming devices on Spencer Avenue between Worley Street and I-70 Drive Southwest. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Don Wadmore. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. All right, moving on to old business. Sheila, will you please read Bill 5924 and Bill 6024?
Council Bill 5924 is an ordinance determining it is in the public interest to construct a single lane roundabout with splitter islands and sidewalk at the intersection of Route K and Old Plank Road, approving and adopting plans and specifications, determining that the work shall be done by contract, calling for bids through the purchasing division, providing for payment for the improvement, authorizing the city manager to obtain, execute, and record all documents necessary for the improvement, providing for compliance with the prevailing wage law and state mandated construction safety training, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading. Council Bill 6024 is an ordinance declaring the need to acquire certain easements for construction of a single lane roundabout with splitter islands and sidewalk at the intersection of Route K and Old Plank Road, authorizing acquisition by negotiation or, if necessary, by condemnation, authorizing the city manager to obtain and execute all instruments necessary for acquisition of such land, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes. There are two ordinances before you tonight which would authorize the acquisition of easements and the construction of a roundabout at the intersection of Route K and Old Plank Road. It's common for these types of items to be on the consent agenda because the project has already been before council as a public hearing. This project was heard and approved at the June 5th council meeting, city council meeting of last year. The reason for each of these being on old business tonight is due to an incorrect directional reference and the need for a better description of the method by which property will be obtained. The memo that was on the council agenda last time incorrectly indicated that the west entrance entrance of the Little General gas station would be aligned with Vermilion Drive rather than the east entrance, and this has been corrected accordingly. This roundabout, upon completion, will be maintained by MoDOT. Therefore, MoDOT requires that property be acquired in fee simple, which varies from the city's typical easement acquisition. Therefore, the memo and the ordinance have been modified to convey that accordingly.
Are there any questions of staff from council? Seeing none, would anyone from the public wish to speak on the authorizing of the single lane roundabout with Splitter Islands at Route K and Old Plank Road? Coming back to us? Any questions come to you, council? All right. So I'll make a motion to amend Bill 6024 per the amendment sheet. Can I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Betsy. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Sheila, will you please call roll on Bill 5924 and Bill 6024 as amended individually?
Yes. Council Bill 5924, Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Prophet?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Council Bill 6024 as amended, Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Prophet?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
All right, moving on to the consent agenda. Sheila, will you please read the items on the consent agenda twice and to call the roll?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 5524, 5624, 5724, 5824, 6124, 6224, 6224, 6324, 6424, and resolution 6724, 6824, 6924, 7024, 7124, 7224, 7324, and 7424. Bills 5524, 5624, 5724, 5824, 6124, 6224, 6324, 6424, and resolutions 6724, 6824, 6924, 7024, 7124, 7224, 7324, and 7424. Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Prophet?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
All right, moving on to, turn my page faster. New business. Sheila, will you please read resolution 7524?
Council Bill 7524 is a resolution authorizing a First Amendment to the collective bargaining agreement with Columbia Police Officers Association, Fraternal Order of Police Lodge Number 26.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes, Mayor. Mike Griggs, Deputy City Manager. This is Kathy Baker, our Human Resource Director. This is a First Amendment to the CPOA collective bargaining agreement. What we're seeking is approval of basically that does three things. It addresses pay compression, it sets aside their pay adjustments for the FY25 fiscal year, as well as establishing a lateral transfer policy. This is the First Amendment to CBA, and that contract expires September 30th, 2028. And as always, all of our contracts include an annual compensation and wage reopener. The total estimated impact for 1 year is $800,000. For the remainder of this budget year, FY24, we don't need to do any appropriation due to expected expenses in terms of just personnel, materials, supplies, et cetera. And as the police department prepares their FY25 budget, they'll make adjustments based on the new income or the new salaries. As we always stated, the goal is to address pay compression and provide for FY25. The advantage of doing this now is that all the police officers and sergeants will have the benefit of getting their pay now instead of waiting until October 1st of 2024. So it is a way to get them their salary a little bit earlier. Our existing pay grades, and you can kind of see this, we see the P1 is our police officer in training, a P2 is an officer, a P3 is a sergeant, and then we go up to lieutenants. And I want to bring out the P's just as you see it on the next one on the case study. In this case, we have a pay range where we have a minimum and a maximum, and then they're paid in between there based on years of service and merit. In FY24, CBA established the new minimum pay for a police officer was increased from $24.56, which is about $51,000 a year, to $27.50, which is $57,200 per year. And so we've addressed some of that, but at this time when we did that pay increase to $27.50, we basically created about 60 officers all making about the same amount, whether they're a new officer or a six-year officer. So that's why we're working on the compression right now. So what we've negotiated with CPOA was a pay scale for the duration of this agreement. So the entry for new police officers is now $60,000, a little over $60,000. And then members are placed in a pay steps and pay rates based on years, service, et cetera. And that's all shown on Exhibit A. So you can see what everybody's making based on where they're at on that exhibit. The amendment also addresses lateral transfers, where this is where one police officer from another police agency or someone with military service that includes law enforcement leaves their agency to come to work for our police department. And so what we've just worked out with our officers will be hired at the step that matches the years of qualified service up to a maximum of 10 years. The good news on this is now I say you've got someone who's been 5 years in Centralia or any other city around here. When they come to Columbia, they don't have to start all over. They'll be coming back in at that level. And we think that's going to be a great recruiting tool. The calculation years of service is based solely on full-time paid service. So there's a lot of reserve officers, part-time, you know, security guards. That's not going to qualify. They've got to be a full-time police. And basically, to be eligible, they just have to meet all the normal pre-employment requirements, complete the testing. They still have to apply, and they have to have a valid post-certification. Pending council approval tonight, the pay will be effective with a pay period that starts Sunday, April 14th. So staff has requested the First Amendment to the CBA with CPOA. We're here to answer any questions you may have.
Questions from council for staff. Nick Knoth.
For this step plan, when folks meet, you know, whatever years of service, does the transition change? Is that automatic? Like they hit 5 years or 6 years and they automatically move up to the next step, or how does that work?
So there's no automatic movement to steps, but the establishing the step plan, they will enter at the step that equates to their years of service. And then any movement within the steps or changes to the rates for the steps will be part of the annual wage reopener.
So officers will only attain the next step as a result of collective bargaining?
Correct.
It's similar to what we do with fire.
Okay, that was my next question.
Yes.
Exactly, just like them. They have a step plan, but each year we negotiate, you know, so for example, it may be everybody moves up one step, and then there's a 2% cost of living to all steps. So those are the adjustments that could be made.
Is any of it performance-based?
Not at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Remind me too, so we'll be receiving this, but when we adopted the classification and compensation plan and like the wage philosophy, we will be seeing similar amendments coming back for our other negotiated labor unions to be represented for the pay compression issue.
Correct. Correct? We're still negotiating with the other labor groups, and we will also be presenting a plan for unrepresented employees as well.
Okay. Appreciate that. All right, any other questions before I open up for public comment? All right, would anybody from the public wish to speak on Resolution 7524, approving amendment with the CPOA?
Chris Jones, Second Ward. In September, all of you up there just gave CPOA, CPD, a massive pay bump, like much larger than any other department that I noticed. Beginning officers went up by several thousand dollars. You did not give the same benefit to the other departments in the city. So my question is if you are going to give mid-year yet another pay bump after they just got a pay bump, are you going to do the same for all the other departments? Barbara is nodding her head yes, right? And Because Matthew Liu, I just sat through the vast majority of pre-council, and he just predicted that we are going to be having a massive shortfall within the coming years in our revenue versus expenditures. So why do we keep giving CPD such a massive pay bump all the time? Thank you.
Thank you. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on Resolution 7524? Seeing none, we'll come back to council comments. Our council questions, clarifying comments? Thank you for answering the question about that we'll see these for unrepresented as well as the other labor unions coming back to us in the coming weeks for a mid-year pay increase as well. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That's what I heard you
it
say.
It is correct. However, please keep in mind that some of the labor groups choose to negotiate their increases to occur at a different time. So they may choose to delay it until the fiscal year.
Yep. I appreciate that's part of the process. Yeah, Nick Foster.
Yeah, I just want to say that I appreciate you all beginning to do this now. So that we're not waiting months and months for it. And I anticipate we'll have a similar result with the other groups that we're talking with as well as unrepresented. So I think this is good work, I think.
Any other council comments? All right. Sheila, will you please call roll on Resolution 7524?
Council Bill 7524, Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Proffitt?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Moving on. Sheila, will you please read the items under introduction and first reading?
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bill 6524, 6624, 6724, 6824, 6924, 7024, 7124, 7224, 7324, 7424, 7524, 7624, 7724, 7824, 7924, 8024, and 8124, first reading.
Thank you. All right, so we're moving on to the report section. We are so far ahead than a normal agenda. I would like to ask for Boy Scouts to come to every meeting. It is because of you all being here. So first up under reports, so report 2224. I'm not sure if we have anyone from the business loop here. So this is our suggested business loop CID appointments. And so I would like to, unless there's any concern, I'd like to appoint the recommendations that they have. So appoint Jay Rader, Susie McGarvey, and Ryan Ulis to terms ending in April 19th, 2027. Can I have the consent of council for these appointments?
No objection.
No objection? No objection? Okay. Moving on to report 2324. This is asking for feedback about having staff and planning and zoning looking into changing hotels in the mixed use corridor district. It's an amendment request, and so it requires coming to staff. Do you have a staff report, or do you just want the feedback from?
Just feedback or questions at this time, and this would just be a referral to the commission to look at this specific issue of how tall a hotel can be built within a radius of expressway, freeway.
Questions for staff? Yeah, Nick Foster.
I think that hearing back from you all, I'll be interested in hearing the historical context for how we've come to this number already, how that might impact other buildings that could be proposed later as well. And that, why 45 feet basically is my question, and this versus other things. So understanding that better would be helpful. Okay.
Yeah.
Contextually.
Yeah, we get into the background quite a bit in our reporting to the commission. Okay. There is a specific amendment submitted, but we'll probably have comments on that. So when it comes back to you, it might look different.
Good.
Any other additional council comments or questions on this one? So if council desires, I'll make a motion to proceed with staff processing the review of an amendment for Chapter 29 with regard to the height of hotels in specific locations. Can I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Nick Foster. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? No? Seeing going. Thank you. All right, moving on. The next five are from boards and commissions report. And so I'll just point out that we did have a conversation in pre-council about doing a more holistic review of boards and commissions and feedback, but we have things before us. So staff report on this one from Public Transit Advisory Commission.
Sure. The Public Transit Advisory Commission has proposed three changes to their establishing legislation that are detailed in the report. Staff's comfortable with the idea of an annual report to council and the membership modifications. However, we recommend that PTAC reach out to Columbia College and Stevens College on their proposed changes. The University of Missouri representative is proposed to remain in place, so I'd like to make sure that both the other two colleges are aware and are able to provide feedback. And then staff's also of the opinion that quorum should be a defined number just for clarity more than anything else. A reduction in total members is one way to get there, and staff's just requesting guidance from council on how you'd like us to proceed.
Okay. Questions from council for staff? So I know I asked this question beforehand. So it sounds like I think you said something like 20% or 30% of their meetings over the last 2 years failed to happen because of quorum. Do we know, was that, because in the letter from the chair, it reads like it was because of the representatives of certain industries.
If in the establishing legislation, it's pretty specific about the background or the interest in certain members of that board. And I think there are certain ones of those that haven't attended quite at the same rate. Some of the more general members have, and so they thought maybe making it where it was more open, using that as a criteria maybe to determine who would be on the board, but not making that a defining criteria, might help them not only generate folks interested in being on the commission, but also when they're on the commission, folks that, you know, maybe would attend at a higher rate.
So I have a question, and I don't know if it might be another staff member might know. I don't know if Sheila or Nancy or DeCarlin. So we have a few boards and commissions where we have representatives kind of assigned to an institution to serve. In those instances, do those serve as counting towards quorum, or is it normally the council appointees count towards quorum?
They count towards the quorum if they are actually members of the board or commission. The only time they don't count towards a quorum is if they are a non-voting liaison, at which point in time they don't count toward a quorum. And a quorum by definition is 50% of the whole of the organization, which is why, say in this instance, it's a 13-member commission, that would mean seven.
Right.
And we have also, just to kind of build upon what has been presented, we have been trying to trend toward more broad parameters when it comes to board and commission membership so that it isn't one person shall be X, one person shall be Y. More along the lines of consideration shall be given to appointing a well-rounded board with this type of background to let council have more flexibility in the appointment of those members.
Yeah, Roy.
So how many absences can a commissioner miss before we consider removing them from a board or a commission?
Well, different boards and commissions have specific attendance and vacancy requirements. I didn't look this one up specifically. I really think it would be best practice overall for the city to have what I think of as more of a general enabling same rules applying to all boards and commissions across the board rather than each board or commission having its separate requirements as it regards the vacancies and then the number of meetings missed.
So what will we have to do in order to implement a standard straight across the board?
If you tell us you want to move that direction, we will start moving that direction. I will tell you it will take some time to do just because of the large number of boards and commissions we have and the amendments that will have to occur with those ordinances. But if you want to move that direction, we can do it.
Well, council, I would love to move that way so that it's equal across the board, because I know the Youth Advisory Board has a attendance that if they miss so many, then they are removed from that board, and I would love to see it equal. So with you guys' permission, and if it be so moved, I would love to.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have a second on that motion to have a kind of have staff review across the board requirement for how the attendance is. Is that
correct?
Did you have a comment on the motion?
I just want to add to that consideration, not only attendance for regular meetings, but attendance for work sessions. Because a lot of these boards and commissions do have actual work, whether it's planning, zoning, or others, where those work sessions are just as important as the regular meetings. And so we should expect them to attend. The same policy should be held to both, is my point.
Sure. We can do that, and we will point out to you anything that might be an outlier. Say if there is a 25% general attendance, or not miss more than 25% of the meetings, and if you have a board or commission that only meets quarterly, that might be an outlier that we could bring back to you and with an asterisk and get your feedback on how you want to deal with that. I'm just throwing that as an example. I'm not sure.
I have an additional question. I think one of the things that also can trip up is some of them have like the chair or staff liaison has to is it an automatic removal? You know, the clerk's office is then given the purview to eliminate, or what is that enforcement? Because sometimes it's going to require different feedback. You're going to say something, Sheila.
I think it's pretty clear that it's automatic, but if we're not informed, then it doesn't happen. And if right. staff's not tracking it or the chair's not tracking it, it's not happening either.
Right.
And certainly those could come back to you as someone requesting a reappointment in the event that someone's automatically removed and there was a reason why that maybe did occur or should not have occurred. Typically, the language reads excused absences versus unexcused and overall certain percentages.
Yeah. So I think having those best practices for also how staff can determine or chair can determine what is excused and what is not excused. Rachel, you had a question, and then Nick Foster.
My question is then also, what's our timing for doing something like this also with surveying, just for efficiency and data back to council's sake?
Right. I think part of it, I assume, is you all need to do some reviews of the existing, and it'll probably be happening kind of at the same time and might come together so all comprehensively.
And I think if we're going to make changes, I think that's the best approach, is that we try to work through all avenues at the same time and then bring forth a plan on how we can address all boards and commissions.
Nick Foster.
Well, just that it sounds like someone would need to be assigned responsibility for informing the clerk about anyone. So there would need to be specificity about that, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The chair or the staff liaison.
Okay. Any other comments on this amendment to request for this comment? I'll just to make it clear, we have the motion to request to come back to us about attendance. Making it consistent across boards and commissions. Any other comments on it? All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none. To this point, so that was an additional kind of more related. To this one, do we think that we need to have any, this is for council, any updates to the PTAC legislation relating to the request for an annual report? Or the generalization of existing consideration section, or do we want to ask them to make that as part of this more comprehensive review, like the survey we're going to do?
I would be interested in hearing from them on that, since we're already going to ask them other questions, but I'm also open to if my fellow council members have ideas already.
I think part of it's going to depend on how soon we think we can get out these surveys. And then go through, because we do have recommendations in front of us for some of these things. But as far as making legislation changes, I would like to do it more comprehensive, like at the same time. Yeah, Nick Foster.
Well, that was really my question. Do we want to do any of this now? I mean, we've got this one who's asking for these changes right now. Do we want to go ahead and address this in light of the fact that we may do something more comprehensive that could impact the decisions we make now, or do we want to wait? I don't. I think my tendency is to think there's some initiative on their part. So if we can just go ahead and address this one, that may even inform what we do otherwise. In other words, this would be a kind of proof of concept in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. You had, and then Rachel?
To kind of counter that, though, I wonder, too, if this is sort of like there's a more root cause that goes across a lot of these boards and commissions that just by addressing one is more at a surface level versus waiting a little bit to do something that, that can go across the board, literally.
Nick Knoth, and then Don.
I just want to follow up on Nick's comment of us having a direct request from a board or commission right now. Is it's not the only one. I mean, we had a Downtown Leadership Council put a request to us a couple months ago.
Which spurred the conversation
right.
about having a more comprehensive
review. And so my point is
review.
That's on hold.
Yeah.
So this would be in line with that of us putting it on hold.
Yeah.
I'm fine either way.
Yeah.
Whatever might be more helpful.
Don and then Betsy.
I would be leaning towards, since, again, we have specific requests here, I would be inclined towards going ahead and moving on addressing, approving, or disapproving these specific requests for the PTAC for a couple reasons. One, again, it's already here. But two, given that we have this study that's ongoing and we're expecting the results, we probably won't have this comprehensive review and thing done by the time we get the report from the public transit study. Which we're going to want to move on. It's been such an issue that's been drug on for so long that whatever this, we're going to need to move on. And it's going to be, you know, this, they're going to have a part in that. So if you need me to, I'll make a motion to go ahead and for PTAC adopt these three suggestions.
So I think, though, just to clarify on that one, well, do we have a second on the amendment to adopt all three? Okay, so not adopt all three. I think, but Don, that's because I think we heard that the third one does not make as much sense because it doesn't
okay,
follow our best practice of seven, yeah, of the majority being
one and two.
A quorum. That, so do you want to remake your motion?
All right, I'll remake my motion to adopt one and two.
I'll second.
Second about that. Any conversation on that? As a reminder, that is adding language to their legislation to include an annual report and amending the membership requirements to make them from required to suggested to be representatives. And I think you can, clarification, Shane, you said you were going to reach out to Columbia College and Stevens College before we made any official changes.
Yeah, we'd have to come back with a change to their establishing legislation. And when we do that, what I should have in the report is we've reached out, here's what the feedback we've received, and we've addressed it in this way.
Right. So. And to your point, Nick Knoth, on the one that we kind of, I think from reading on some of them are a little bit more, like that one was expanding boundaries, adding additional items. This is kind of like clarifying, yeah, on their topics. You had a comment or question?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm okay with doing this, but I don't want this to become like the best practice.
Right.
So making sure that boards and commissions understand that like why we're doing it is very specific to why we're doing it, and that it does. We don't get a whole bunch of reports requesting the same thing.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, so we have a motion and a second to request staff to review making proposed legislation for the first and second items, which are adding language about including an annual report and amending membership requirements to eliminate required membership and moving those individuals to existing consideration section if that's the best practice. All of those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, so that will be the direction for staff. Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
And Mayor, if I can just interject, I as the person who's probably going to have to do the drafting, I just do want to give you a heads up that we probably will not use exactly that language. If
yes.
that's, I'm
yes.
assuming that's your intent, is that we have some at least.
Consistency with our other similar boards and commissions, they either have considerations for appointments, as well as how they put in the duties and responsibilities, how they do an annual report.
Yes. Absolutely, okay.
Thank you. Yes. Start those best practices now, Nancy. Things we want to see. Okay, moving on to report 2554. This has some wording changes. Do we have a staff report from health?
Yes, in keeping with the theme of commissions and changes, Substance Abuse Advisory Commission has sent you some correspondence, and they have some recommendations for changes to their ordinance, and they put a lot of thought into it. They're not extensive changes. They're not asking about quorums or things like that. But they're really talking about modernizing the language of which how we talk about substance use. We no longer use the word abuse. We use the word use, misuse, lots of other things. We talk about harm reduction. So I think they've made some great recommendations. We can either wait until it's part of some big, grander rewrite of these kinds of things, or this would be one that I would like to see happen sooner.
Questions from council? No real questions. So just as a reminder, so because it's not as like labeled out on here.
It's on page 2.
Okay. And that is where we are changing an update to the commission name from Substance Abuse Advisory Commission to Substance Use Prevention Advisory Commission.
Yes.
And then advise, and basically the word changing with removing abuse and reflecting with use and have a few other word changes.
Correct. And then also the note, in the previously the focus was around children.
Right.
And it's recommending,
right,
you know, a larger population.
So if anyone want, it would be making a motion to approve the two updates that they have on this piece.
You need a motion?
Yes.
I so move.
I'll second.
We have a second by Nick Knoth. Any conversation on that? And again, this is kind of like a cleanup, mm-hmm. not necessarily changing the scope of the commission, even its numbers or anything like that. All right, so we have a motion and second on doing the two updates that they have for this. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, motion carries. Thank you for that. All right, moving on to report 26-24. This is communication from the Citizens Police Review Board relating to the Chapter 21 amendments to provide the police chief an extension for the determination. Do we have a staff report or comment?
I was just looking out to see if there was anybody here from the CBRB. Seeing no one, what this particular request would do would be to allow the police chief to, following an appeal to the Citizen Police Review Board, where there is a referral back to the police chief for reconsideration, the code currently provides for there to be 5 business days in which the police chief is required to either change the determination, preliminary determination, or uphold the existing. And if nothing happens within that time period, the existing preliminary determination stands. What this would do would be to allow the police chief to request or notify the board of a date certain by which the police chief would render her reconsideration of the preliminary determination. So that being the case, it would still be a date certain, and it would still have to fall within the parameters and time frames of 59502, which is the also known otherwise as SB 26. And so if the police chief does not request the additional time, then it would fall back to that 5-day period. So the 5-day period still stands. And what that does is it just allows in those more complex circumstances for the chief to have time to go back and have an opportunity to review the facts and circumstances to ensure that the decision is what is needed. Is there anything else to add by the chief? Nope.
Yeah, Roy.
What is the extra allowed amount of time? Like, is it an extra month? Is it an extra, like, how much time is given to the chief in order to say, I need an additional this amount of time before it's too much time?
So, sure. The 59502 requires that any action be taken within 90 days, mm-hmm. Final action within 90 days, with an opportunity for up to 2 60-day extensions, right?
All right, then.
So that's the framework within which everything has to happen, with no extensions past that time unless there is a pending criminal action. That said, I think what your point is how long is too long? There is no limit on that other than the fact that ultimately, if there is an appeal to the city manager, there's still the opportunity to appeal from the city manager. Once it goes to the CPRB, CPRB provides its recommendation to the police chief. The police chief either stands by its recommendation or can go ahead and modify that recommendation. Notice is provided to the complainant. The complainant then has an opportunity, if still not satisfied, to appeal to the city manager. And all of that has to occur within the 90 plus 60 plus 60, right?
Correct.
And ultimately,
the police chief is accountable to the city manager. And if the police chief isn't giving the city manager enough time to review that entire full record, then I think there will be other conversations happening, obviously, between the city manager and police chief. I mean, that's the only thing I can really tell you is that there is that we have to comply with 59502.
Okay. I kind of read that and I understood it. And then it says that if we go past that, then the city manager automatically has the decision-making power for. But what is that? It still doesn't address that allowed amount of time. Because it went from a specific 5 days to however many days.
Well, it's how many every days, but the city manager still has to have an opportunity to review the entire record and also provide his review and recommendation within that 90-day, 60-day, 60-day window. So the 90, I'm not a math person, I apologize.
Okay.
So that ultimately is, that's the drop-dead deadline is the end of that second day extension. And frankly, we just don't ever know how complex a case is. And what this does is it just provides that opportunity for flexibility in the rare instance. I don't think that it's something that normally has to be utilized, and probably wouldn't be utilized on a regular basis. But when you have five days, it's with no flexibility built into the schedule, then there is no opportunity to extend.
To clarify, and this request is coming from the members of the Citizens Police Review Board. This is not a staff-directed.
Okay. Correct.
Did you want to make a comment? Sorry.
I was just saying I do appreciate them making the request because it is difficult sometimes. If they send something back and say, I want to review it with command staff and say, hey, let's all sit down together, look at their recommendations, watch the video together. What do we think about this? It's really hard sometimes to do that in 5 days, especially if on top of that we need to speak with a legal advisor or something to that effect. It's hard to do it that quickly. I will say we've changed kind of the chain that the investigations go through, so that all happens in professional standards now. And I just got my first batch of those, and it's already moving through the system more quickly. Now, obviously, the more complex investigations, like Nancy said, could take longer. But I would anticipate if I was going to ask Mr. Seawood for an extension of that 5 days, I would give him a specific, I am requesting 2 weeks or a week or whatever it is for these reasons. I can't imagine just making an open-ended request. I would want to let him know approximately how much time I think I need to give a recommendation.
And really to that point is that every extension that the chief is requesting is cutting off time on the back end for the city manager to review it, which compresses his time frame. So him and those conversations going back and forth that have to happen as to how much time you need, how much time do I need, and his review is going to be a review of first impression where they have already reviewed it once. So their review will have to, by default, be much more compressed because the city manager on the back end needs a minimum amount of time to make that happen.
Betsy, you have a question?
I think I have more of a comment. If our police chief and the command staff take a lot of time and now give you 5 days to review something, I mean, there's a hard stop. I mean, you can't ask the legislature for an extension to say you need more time to review it. So I feel like we need to sort of make something where you have at least 10 days to renew it or to review it or 3 weeks, you know. It's a little concerning to me to say, well, we'll give the police chief as much time up to the 210-day total, or maybe 118-day total, and give our city manager only 3 days to review it.
I can almost guarantee you if you give the city manager only 3 days to review it that there's going to be a tough, hard conversation with the police chief, just because that is not practical in his world either, right?
Right.
And so it really is about balancing the needs of the department to review the Citizen Police Review Board's recommendation,
right,
knowing how much time is left on the back end of that. If there's still a full 60 days left on the back end of that, what harm are another couple of days to give the department the opportunity to fully review and vet the recommendations coming out of the Citizen Police Review Board. And that's really what we're trying to do, is make sure along these time frames that there is an opportunity for cross-communication and adequate review on all ends. But that's really to the point of I think everybody sitting in this room knows that it's not practical to give the city manager 5 days to review an entire case file, particularly one that has already taken 90 days, 60 days, and up to maybe another 50 of that last 60. That's not practical, nor is it actually going to happen as a practical matter. Could it? It could, theoretically, but it, as a practical matter, it's not.
Nick Foster.
I would just note that the written notice would include the date by which the police chief shall either reaffirm or modify, but that notice goes to the board, to the complainant, the police officer, and the city manager. So the city manager will be aware, and really a lot of this remains at his discretion about how long should be allowed. And that's just understood, I assume.
Can I ask, I know that we recently made changes in timing last year. Was that last year? I think it was like last year, either last year, like March of last year or the March of the previous. When we were making comments about that, we made comment to checking to see if maybe kind of if the CPRB, you know, if they're noticing an instance where things are taking longer or like this is happening, if maybe we can get a report back to council in a year, you know, to see is there being an instance. And I know, DeCarlin, you had talked about having, and I think it will be happening within your new assistant city manager, the sort of tracking on the timing, and maybe if that can be something that is included in a quarterly report, just something that's coming to us so we can see if there's any flags about timing that is dealing with either staffing or how we do notification, I think would be appreciated and kind of give us that feedback to check.
I think we'll be doing that within internal affairs as well. For one thing, it helps us understand, do we need more staff? Do we have just enough staff? Do we not need any more staff? Should we cut staff? So if we can see how long an investigation on average is taking, how it's moving through the process. Plus, we want to know if the new setup's actually working as efficiently as we thought. So I know that's something that Assistant Chief Dickinson is going to be tracking as well.
Yeah. All right. So for this one, the motion request is for the proposed amendments that came to us from the Citizens Police Review Board. So do we have a motion to make the updates to Section 2152 as recommended by the Citizens Police Review Board?
So moved.
So moved by Betsy. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Don. All those in favor of updating Section 2152 as recommended by the Citizens Police Review Board, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Nay.
Anyone nay? All right. So this will come back to us, I assume, with a change in which we'll really vote on this. Is that correct, Nancy? Okay. So we'll come back with it to vote on. All right. Moving on, so reports 2724 and 2824 are feedback from a couple of our boards and commissions in relation to the 100% renewable energy. And it was my understanding we've advised Water and Light Advisory Board to look into this, and council kind of gave the direction. And I think, is it correct, DeCarlin, that we'll receive feedback from the Water Light Advisory Board by September?
Yes.
By the end of the fiscal year?
Best of plan.
Okay. And then also, just I knew from Climate and Environment Commission we expected to see something because of the cap. I don't recall advising, appointing it to the Finance and Advisory and an Audit Committee. So I think I'm trying to keep track of who we've asked to do reviews. So just appreciate the feedback, but looking forward to hearing from the Water and Light Advisory Board on their recommendations for this. Any questions on that one? All right. Moving on, report 2924. This is our Juneteenth Grant Evaluation Committee. Do we have a staff report?
Yes, sorry. Amy Schneider, Convention and Visitors Bureau. In the fall of 2023, the city applied for Juneteenth grant funding through the Department of Economic Development, Division of Tourism, State of Missouri. We received notice of our award in December of 23. The intention of the grant was to commemorate and celebrate the Juneteenth holiday by supporting community-wide Juneteenth celebrations. While other communities chose to organize city-organized events, we wanted to make the funding available to our community members who already planned and organized these events or who wanted to plan and organize these events. The mayor and council appointed a grant evaluation committee with members selected from each ward, as well as a council liaison. This committee met to discuss and provide guidance on the application process. An informational session was hosted at the ARC for community members with potential interest in applying for grant funds. Once the application was finalized and open, information was distributed via multiple press releases, emails to community members, including those that attended the community meetings, and via social media. A link to the application was on the City of Columbia website, Parks and Recreation website, and the CVB website, with physical applications available at City Hall, the Gentry Building, and the Walton Building. The committee reviewed applications and met twice to score and award funding. Criteria for this program was aligned with criteria required by the State of Missouri Department of Economic Development. There were 9 groups that were awarded the grant applications. Juneteenth kickoff musical celebration at the Second Missionary Baptist Church for the Columbia NAACP. MU celebrates Juneteenth at Traditions Plaza Carnahan Quad on Mizzou campus. The Mizzou Inclusive Engagement and Engagement Constituent Relations. June 15th, a pop-up display exhibit, We Must Not Forget the Long Journey at Douglas Park. This display will also be at the June 1st event and at a Cosmo Park event on the June 19th. The organizer of that was Donna Claiborne. Columbia Cemetery United States Colored Troops Memorial at Columbia Cemetery. The organizer was Dr. Kevin McPartland with the Mizzou History Department. Let Freedom Ring, Gospel Celebration Minority Vendor Show Expo at Urban Empowerment. That was the Columbia African American Business Alliance. Como Juneteenth Celebration at Douglas Park, Reverend James Gray. Juneteenth at Stevens Lake Park, SoCal Catering. Columbia's 4th Annual Juneteenth Event by the Village at Cosmo Park, the Village of Columbia. And Powerhouse Annual Juneteenth Event at Cosmo Park, Powerhouse Community Development. We used Cypress Business Consultants as a community connector. We will be co-hosting workshops with them to ensure grant awardees have all the information they need throughout the process. We also utilized them before the applications were due so that they could go over the application and answer any questions about that. Advertising and marketing. One of the advantages of this process is the ability to cooperatively market these events to Columbia and the surrounding communities. The city will be producing traditional and social marketing pieces that include all Juneteenth events, and we will create a landing page on the CVB website, link it to the city website, to update info as it evolves. Individual events will also do their own marketing. One of the most important takeaways of this is the highlighted need for the city to evaluate and improve engagement with members of the African American community on cultural events and activities. As a result, we will continue citywide collaboration by having discussions between the City of Columbia and members of the African American community. One such discussion will be a meeting following all of the Juneteenth events to discuss what went well and what could have been done better regarding this grant process if we awarded funds in the future. And that's all I have. Do you have any questions?
You're Amy. Roy, as our council liaison to the Juneteenth Evaluation Committee, do you want to say anything?
I would like to say thank you, Amy. Also, I'm very appreciative of the post meetings in order to see how we can do things a little bit better and different. I also am appreciative of having that relationship with the Black and Brown community in order to see how they could continue to lend their voices to different events. Overall, we understand that there was a process that was a bit rocky, but just taking the time into consideration in order to have that post meeting in order to address how to do it better is already taking some accountability. So I appreciate that.
Any other council comments? So this is information only because we had already approved to allow the city manager to sign the sub-grant, so there's no motion or legislation needed for this?
No, and I guess I apologize. I guess I forgot to say that the Juneteenth Grant Evaluation Committee will now disband now that their work has been completed, and that was via the discussion in the January meeting.
Right, right. But they'll all be invited to the post-event evaluation meeting.
Absolutely, yes, of course.
Right, okay. Well, thank you, appreciate that. And following along with the process and hearing back about what we can do to improve and continue forward. Thank you. All right, moving on to report 3024. This is our termination of an MOU with the Central Missouri Humane Society because they found another property and didn't need ours. This is for information only, I think. We don't have to do anything. There's no council action.
Not at all.
Anything? Okay. All right. Well, good luck to them. This is exciting for them to move into a better facility. So I know the puppies and kitties will be happy. All right. Moving up next, report 3124. This is our fiscal year 24 uncollectible receivables. Do we have a staff report?
Yes, this report basically outlines the uncollectible debts that we have and the write-off process. This is a financial process that has to be done every year.
So I know I asked for some questions, which sometimes people have. So just as a quick overview, like a lot of these, when it's coming to this point of write-off, it has been how many years have it's been in the process?
At least 5 years, but some of these are older.
And so in the case of these things where it's like we did not receive collectibles on maybe a dumpster roll-off or the non-utility ones, what changes have we made in finance to improve the process so that we have fewer of these as we go forward?
So we have begun working, business license and community development has been working with our accounts receivable department to put together some processes that when we see certain businesses that may or people that may have a outstanding bill, if they try to get either a business license or permit through the community development, we're able to then say, hey, you have this bill outstanding, and before we can issue said permit or license, you have to bring your account current.
And Betsy, you have a question.
Otherwise, what is the routine way that you approach this? I mean, we have a lot of these that are uncollectible over the last 5 years. So what does the finance department do to try and collect those, or the utility department, whatever?
So utility has a process, finance has a process as well. And then once they run through that collection process, in-house, we send it to a collection agency, who then tries to collect on the debt. There are certain ones that we will continue ourselves to try to collect on as well. Our collection agency, I believe, year to date is up to about 27% collection clearance rate, which is higher than the average. I believe the average is like 11%. So.
Is there, I know Barbara was mentioning the non-utility finances that we're writing off or that you're recommending we write off along with the utility ones. Is there any follow-up from the city as to, I mean, are we unable to get in touch with these people, or they just can't pay the bill, or they have moved out of town, or do we
there's
have any
a story
feel
behind,
for
yeah.
how many of what we have here?
Yes, there's a story behind a lot of it. A lot of the utility things ends up being kids that may have went to the school and then they leave town and we have no way of getting a hold of them. We have some businesses on there that also could use some follow-up or maybe they left the city and so we don't have a good contact for them. So there are situations like that.
So these are bills that aren't collected and we've kept their deposit? I mean, we have deposits for all of these utility bills, right?
Yes.
So then
if
these
they had
are...
a deposit, yes.
Okay.
And then to the point, even though we write this off, there are still potentially for some of those are in collections and we might still, I think you said 23% or 25% still could be recovered?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So yes, this is strictly a financial procedure that has to be done on debt that is 5 years or older. It's the best practice.
All right. Okay. Any other questions from council? Comments on this? No, thank you. Information, appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, moving on, we are now at general comments by the public. Would anybody from the public wish to speak?
You can give it to me and I can pass it out.
I'm like to make eye contact, get his steps in. So, or listen to it.
Good evening, I'm old John Conway. My wife Pam and I and our two dogs, Lucy Lou and Olivia Grace, we still live at 4902 Thornbrook Ridge. It was appropriate tonight that the Boy Scouts were here because what I have to say real quickly here is be prepared. And so a part of that preparedness is I prepared a city council worksheet for the water system budget for the projects. I've got those outlined, and those main discussion is for Bill 7224 and 7324 that's on the agenda tonight. And those have to do with amendments to the engineering services contract. And we're being presented with an engineering services contract when we don't even have a construction contract. And we don't have a total project budget presented to the council and the public as to what the total cost is and where all the money's coming from. So it seems that maybe we're getting the cart in front of the horse by trying to amend the engineering service agreement before we got the budget all settled out and who the contractors are going to be. And so these are pretty laid out, pretty simple here as to there's the four elements of the budget, the construction contract, the engineering design part, the contract administration, and the contingency. And those are the main four components. But you need all four of those components in front of you before you start down the road to award a construction contract as well as amend a engineering service agreement, especially on the water treatment plant. That amendment is for $1,749,340. That's a lot of money. $1,749,340. When have they ever talked about that? They haven't. They've only talked about the construction cost. And so we need to assemble all these costs and also know where all the money's coming from to pay for this. And then you have an amendment of this magnitude, and there's no evidence that has even been to the Water and Light Advisory Board. It would seem that something of this magnitude would need their purview and understanding, and that would be an advisory capacity they would have to the council. And then the Southeast Booster Station is nowhere to be seen. What's its status according to this? It's another unknown. And so, with 1 second left, I'll say
thank you, John.
Good night.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Of course, I want to speak. Chris Jones, Second Ward, on 5 minutes, please, on behalf of Hold Como Accountable. On March 16th, I sent the following email to several members or several people in the room, including the mayor, DeCarlin Seawood, Mike Griggs, and Jill Schluti. What is the policy for when the officers will respond to welfare checks for residents who are suicidal? Under what circumstances would officers refuse to do welfare check when called multiple times? Under what circumstances would an officer say their sergeant didn't want them to risk it? Why, for instance, might a sergeant say that they had other calls or that CPD didn't want to be bothered? I realize that some calls have higher precedence than others, but is there a written policy or is it unwritten? Where does someone who is suicidal fit in that order? Does CPD put people in certain neighborhoods lower on the priority list? Certain wards? The goal has been for all officers to have CIT training. Will crisis calls be ignored if a CIT-trained officer isn't readily available? What is the status of having Burrell on call? Social workers? I know I've spoken with Lance and Julia about witnessing two officers who excel when dealing with mental health crises in at-risk communities. I just want nearly 200 officers to be equally as good. I look forward to your response. During council, last council, on the 18th, I got the following email back from the mayor that she had, I won't read the email because it contains names, that said that she would get back with me. I have not received that message back. This is in regards to when a veteran who lives in Columbia committed suicide. She text messaged a friend that she was done. Her friend called 911. The sergeant said she wasn't worth it, or that it wasn't worth the time. The friend called three separate times. The police department refused to respond. They refused to knock down that door, even though she had the text messages. That friend, 12 hours later, was found dead in her apartment. We as a community have said that we prioritize our veterans over almost any other community. We didn't. Thank you.
Would anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline. Tonight, I just want you to know that I've come across a Como Street Gazette dated February of this year. It's full of articles to do with the homeless. I got this at the local library. I had thought about reading from it, but in the meantime, I have so much other subject, homelessness. Had a gentleman yesterday, or anyone that's ever done one thing or the homeless, he would like to give $1 million if he could just come up with it. He thinks Columbia's doing that good a job. He is truly disabled, and I regretfully had to approach him Sunday morning and ask him to be quiet. I did not know his disability. For each one of us have got to wake up and realize jumping on a person that's homeless because of their actions, we do not know where they've come from nor what abuse they've had. It is a very, very sad situation that anyone can step up and help, but knowing the right thing to do. This one gentleman, I've asked him to start helping me to do the offering in church. He stepped up proudly. I know he's an alcoholic. I'm not going to focus on his alcoholism. I'm going to give him a chance. He's been doing a very good job of passing the offering plate. To have joined the church last Sunday, he said, that was my birthday. And during this week, he suffered a major seizure and was 2 hours from death. He was there to tell us Sunday morning, I live because my potassium dropped. And I said, do you realize that alcohol is not the high you're looking for? You're looking for life, beyond today's high. Let's hope everyone that's helping the homeless can give them that ability to go beyond the use of the illegal, whatever it being. We consider alcohol to be illegal. One said he is flying to Florida. He was telling everyone goodbye last night. One hardcore person is now going to get a home under housing authority. This is his second home. I just caught up with Randy Cole to let him know the gentleman's name. I want him to make it this time. But one of the things we have all forgotten is they don't necessarily know how to maintain what is a home.
Thank you, Eugene.
And only through someone knowing who they are can they do that.
Thank you, Eugene.
The loaves and fishes moved last night.
Thank you, Eugene.
Thank you.
Would anyone else from the public wish to speak? Seeing none, we'll go to council comments. Nick Foster, I'll start with you.
Just want to mention a couple of things. We did approve two more contracts out of the ARPA funding, and both have related to homelessness and housing. One to go to CHA, which will sustain some housing that's already there, but also I think in this project there's going to be some additional units that will be added to that as well. So that's a big one, $3 million. The other is a $3 million contract voluntary action center to build the Opportunity Campus, to go toward the construction of the Opportunity Campus. And they've broken ground, and that work is ongoing out on the business loop, which is good to see. So both of these things, good movements forward. And I just want to mention, something I really neglected to mention last week, that there is a housing study going on right now that's part of the upward mobility project that is being led by the county, but the housing study is co-funded by the city as well as the county. And there is a survey that's open through April 14th, and I really encourage everyone to do that. I'm looking at Becky. Becky, if you happen to have this flyer with you, you can share it with folks. But I can't give you an easy link to go to, but if you do a search on upward mobility, Boone County, you should be able to find your way to it. This is a really important survey so that we get as much input as we can from the community about what our housing needs are and what solutions to our housing challenges might be. So just an encouragement to fill out that survey by April 14th.
Don Waterman.
Thank you, everyone, for coming out tonight. Just wanted to say thank you to the current council, because the next time we meet, we'll look a little different. So, and so tomorrow is election day, so get out to vote.
And Betsy?
I would just say the same thing Mr. Waterman has said. So it's been a pleasure to serve with this council, and we'll see what the next council looks like. And remember to get out and vote. Thank you.
Nick Knuth.
Kind of just echoing both on the CHA project that we just awarded ARPA dollars to, that is replacing units that are very old, very dilapidated, and just not healthy or efficient. So happy to see that happening. And then I also wanted to say a special thank you to Rachel Prophet for being one of the many folks who stepped up to temporarily serve the second ward. And it was nice working with you.
Rachel?
Yes, my last meeting. So I want to say thank you to my fellow council members for being so patient with me and welcoming. And it is a tough role to just step into, particularly in the middle of a cycle. So thank you for just helping guide me. Thank you to city staff for, I've had several meetings with all of you, and initially when we set them all up, I was like, why am I doing these? I'm only here for a short period of time, but it was actually really wonderful to hear about all the amazing things that you are doing. Like, you truly keep this city running. So thank you for meeting with me and explaining everything that you do, helping me see how all the pieces fit together. So that was really great. And to those of the public that are still here and those of you watching online, please go vote. It is your civic duty, and please get out. Second ward is up for the election, so you'll see a new face up here next time. Roy?
So I want to say ditto to the go vote. It's your civic duty. Go vote, please exercise your right. Also, The Youth Advisory Commission will be having their first mini youth summit, and it will be held on April 7th at the ARC from 12 to 2. It's an opportunity for youth as well as adults to understand what the Youth Advisory Board does. So please bring your youth out to understand and see how they can get active. It's also will be displaying and talk about jobs for youth in the city of Columbia, getting a better understanding of why their voices could be lended to council and different issues throughout the city. There will also be pizza, refreshments, and swag. So please come on out so that the Youth Advisory Board can have someone to talk to. That will be April 7th at the ARC from 12 to 2.
Nick Foster has a question.
Well, I just, this is intended for what age group? Youth can be really elusive when we're defining.
Well, everybody could be educated on it.
Sure.
So, but it's high schoolers who can get active into the process. But
yeah,
we want to start as young as possible to let them know that their voices are important.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. In relation to, were you done? Okay. In relation to tomorrow's election, as a reminder, there are multiple items on that, both city and school board and county. So important to read up on the issues and make your voice heard. And to that point, I'll also point out that we will have a special council meeting on April 11th. That will be for the swearing in of a new second ward council member, as well as the swearing in of, I assume, Betsy, you're running unopposed, so I assume you're going to be there.
Hope so.
This is going to take a real weird turn. But also, we'll also use that time to show recognition for our outgoing council member. So look forward to that. Tentative time is like 5 or 5:30, probably 5:30 just to be safer is what we'll confirm up with that. But that'll be that special council meeting before the next. And then the other thing I was going to ask was that we had a couple of public comments, so asking for staff to maybe follow up with some of the public comment that we had at the scheduled public comment. I think we'd probably appreciate that follow-up, as well as I believe we have had a recent report on rental energy efficiency, but maybe if there's any updates to that that we need to know as far as what's coming to us. And I know that you are working on a community connectors program for outreach in the community. Mm-hmm. And I think helping raise awareness to the programs that we have so we can get more participation in some of the energy efficiency programs we have for all homeowners, renters, all of that, that might work out to be a big one that came up from that. And then I was going to ask, we've been getting lots of communication about automated collection and the rollout of it. Do we have a staff report on kind of status? We heard at the last meeting that the trucks were in, but then maybe they're not all, you know, I mean, you know, so hi, Dave Sorrell. I'm assuming that's why you're in the front row. So thank you.
I always sit in the front row.
Yeah.
Because I usually end up here.
Yeah.
Anyway, now we've gotten lots of concerns about automated collections and customers saying we're seeing manual collections. Well, we started this with 9 routes for large trucks, 2 routes for small trucks, and we decided to go ahead and start on March 4th knowing the small trucks weren't going to be here. So that left us with 2 routes that would be manually collected until the trucks got here. Well, the trucks were supposed to be here this month. Now they're telling us they don't know when they're going to be here. That combined with the fact that not all the trucks that we've only received 9 of the 10. One of them is broken down in Kansas City. They don't have it repaired yet, so they provided us 2 loaners. The loaners have been in the shop often, so sometimes we don't have a full 9 trucks. So we are working right now to get prices on, is there 2 or 3 more trucks available that we could buy or lease and then have them as spares moving forward so that we have additional spares other than the ones that we've accounted for that haven't been delivered. We'll get those prices and we'll talk to the city manager about possibly going ahead and acquiring those, because we don't know how long it's going to be for those 3 small trucks to get here. And then that'll give us additional spares. The other challenge that we have right now, I mean, the conversion's gone pretty well with that, without the exception of those trucks not being here, is that about 1,400 customers have requested a roll cart size change. And so that's been pretty challenging for us to be able to try to deliver 1,400 roll carts in a reasonable amount of time, because every week, if their cart's too small, they get more trash and we're having to go back and collect skips and additional trash. So So we're trying to get a price from our supplier. They distributed the original 35,000 carts to assist us to get those switched out.
Can I ask, what are we doing to proactively send out these updates of information rather than just council replying back to emails that we're receiving?
I'll have to check and see if we can get something put out on the city website or be heard, or if it's already there.
I think I probably speak for council where we would appreciate that. Just because it gives us something to send people to if they have a question or we know, so or that we can answer well. Yeah. Any other questions on solid waste for this? No. Appreciate also recycling continuing that we've had curbside every other week, so that's been appreciated, and I've definitely heard positive feedback on that one. Yeah.
Everybody's happy with that?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Dave. Yeah. Any other staff comments?
Just want to say that the housing study that Mr. Foster mentioned is also on the Be Heard Como website, so people can find access to the survey from Be Heard.
Yeah. Any other staff? Sheila, anything? Nancy, anything from you? Okay. All right, I'll go ahead and adjourn our meeting at 8:40.
I know when the ball game just ended, so you're getting.